Sport Pods.
Ange Postecoglou was a relatively unknown name in Scottish football prior to his appointment at Celtic. But it didn't take him long to prove he was the man to bring the good times back to the club. On this episode of Curry Club, the Scottish Football Sessions, Chris Sutton and I are joined by the Celtic manager.
Ange, great to get a chance to talk to you. A good chance to have a conversation about last season, which was incredible, wasn't it, for you? Now, summertime, although it doesn't look like it behind us. Yeah. Have you had a chance to catch your breath?
Yeah, I have. Kind of reflecting on it, coming virtually from straight from Japan, sort of doing a season and a half. And when you're in it, you don't think about it too much. You're just on the go. But after last game, I had a week where I didn't go away with the family. We just sort of stayed here in Glasgow, had some work to do. And it was a good week for me. I just kind of gave me a chance to reflect on the whole season and everything we'd sort of done, and just seeing that the effect it had on people, whether they're working with the club or supporters of the club, just seeing the effect that had on them. It was a nice little week for me, just to sort of close things off,
take it all in as well.
Yeah, a little bit. Try to. Yeah. But I mean, you're always kind of thinking about what's next, because there's plenty of people who want to drag you back to what's the plans for next year. But I feel like I kind of did what I needed to do through that process.
And a couple of trophies in the bag at the start of this season. Is the pressure off now then?
yeah. What do you reckon? I think from my perspective, I've always seen those kind of things, the pressure and the expectation, that's the bit I love. I mean, I've said a few times, I've managed for 25 years. The worst time I had was the 8 or 9 months where I wasn't working. I missed it. And you kind of figure out, okay, well, if you miss it, don't complain when you're in it that you feel like there's pressure, because that's what I want. I love the fact that every weekend, everything's on a knife edge. We don't know whether we're going to be successful or not. So having success last year doesn't change my mindset in the same way it didn't coming into the job. I was under no illusions. I know, you'd said, well, as long as there's progress, and people said, well, that'll be enough. I wasn't going to cop that. I felt like after a year not winning trophies, I had to deliver something last year.
But that was, to actually think that was nigh on impossible, with respect the mess the club was in when you took over. You came in late because there was all the talk of Eddie Howe, and I think you came in mid-June, so you're behind. You're behind in terms of recruitment. So then, you come in, what was your first impressions when you came in of the situation at the club? And you see, you've just said you believed you could turn it around, but what gives you that belief?
I was aware of obviously what I was walking into, as much as people, kept questioning how much I knew about the club and all this kind of bizarre stuff. Obviously, when I accepted the role, I had a good look at sort of what the last 12 months looked like at the club, and it felt like to me, not the perfect scenario, but the right kind of scenario for someone like me to come in, because that's what I've done everywhere I've gone. Is it felt like there was a team that was coming to the end of a cycle and it needed a regeneration. Now, I like those kind of set of circumstances, because it allows me then, okay, I can bring in, imprint the stuff I want to without too much resistance from what's been there, because you rarely in football take over when a club's been going successful. But if you do, then it's very hard to change culture, change playing style, change environments. Whereas after an unsuccessful season, I go, okay, well, they're going to be looking for something different, because obviously that's why I'm coming in. So I enjoy that aspect of it. So, I tackle the task as if I believe, okay, this is great for me. But it is massive when you realise that when I actually got in here, within 2 weeks, we were playing a Champions League qualifier and I was training with kids.
But this is Glasgow, this is Scotland, where the expectations, you say all that, and the normal thought process about closing the gap and building, most people would say, that would be okay. That's the way I thought, because there's a 25-point gap. I think when I first came up here, Martin O'Neill, it was a 21-point gap, and Martin, had this inner belief he could turn it around. It's one thing thinking it. It's another thing actually getting out there and doing it.
Yeah, and it didn't help that we lost 3 of the first 6 as well. Yeah. So, when you're talking about winning things. But again, I mean, like I said, you've probably felt it with Martin, but it's hard for me to put into words, but I do have I had a real belief that we could achieve something. I really believe that we could build something, and pretty quickly. I needed to do it quickly. I've had a couple of sort of pillars within my management sort of philosophy. That one is the way we play our football, I knew could make an impact. As long as I got the right players in and got them to believe, that could make an impact, because I always feel the kind of football I want my teams to play, there is a point of difference. Everyone wants to say they want to play attacking football and score goals and everything, but very few actually do it. I have a belief that I can produce that. So I thought, okay, well, there's one point of difference. The second point of difference, I thought, if I can tap into some transfer markets that were, you know, a little bit unknown and could give me an edge as well, that would help as well. And I'm sure Martin was the same when he kind of did his recruiting around that time.
Did you not say to me as well about, you know, Martin's connection with the fans immediately, and you felt Ange just got that right away as well, and that was so important to get everyone on board right away?
I think that's important.
Managers, I've got that so quickly. Yeah,
but the most important thing is winning games. Yeah. And I think, in fairness to Martin, you know, he had Larsson, he inherited Moravcik, he inherited Lambert. You know, he was able to spend money on the likes of myself and Jos Valharen. So in many ways, he was better.
Yeah.
Set up. So in terms of the start of the season, you know, you mentioned losing three of the first six games, the Champions League. We were at a couple of friendly games where you got West Ham wiped the floor, you know, press.
And Michelin as well, watching on. You said you could see what Andrew was trying to do, though, right away, even if personnel at the time maybe didn't exactly fit that model.
But was it the fact your experience, the work that you've done throughout your coaching career, which, you know, gave you that belief that eventually, you know, you're big on talking about process and level of performance, so that would eventually come.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's a big element. That's what I expected. I expected it to be a rough start. Now, my sort of objective was I couldn't let that go on too long, so we had to sort of and probably when you look back, the reason I was throwing in players probably before they were ready. I mean, Kyogo literally had lunch with the players at the hotel, and I put him on against Hearts in the first game, the last 10 minutes. Carl Starfelt hadn't even trained with us, and he started that game. The reason was that was the way for me to quicken the process, but it also meant that you can't expect performance and results when you're doing things like that, so it's chaotic. But I thought, well, if I can get through that initial period quickly, I got real belief that once the team's up and running, that the football we play would make an impact. Wherever I've worked, that's always made the impact. That's been the cornerstone of what I've done. So the belief within that means the football, if I can see it, and like I said, you know, Chris, you may have seen it, but I sense even our supporters, you mentioned the supporters, I think they could see, okay, because again, the easiest thing for me is say, oh, I'm going to come in, we're going to play attacking football, and then they go out and watch the game, and they think, oh, no, well, there's nothing there that shows us that. But I think they could see seeds of growth there, and maybe it was the low base I was starting with. You know, people had zero expectations.
Yeah, but at what point did you think that people could start seeing the seeds of growth? Because I mean, we spoke about this before we came in. The game at Aberdeen where Jota scored late. Now,
first away win in a while, I think it was domestically.
I've got a lot of Celtic friends, and some of the Celtic friends were saying, blimey, if Ange loses this one, he's gone. Yeah, and you think, come on, that's, you know, that's unfair on the basis.
Were you saying that as well?
The fact what you inherited, and you talked about once you got the right players in, you know, every manager needs time. I mean, it's crazy football now. You know, you lose four games and you're sacked. But that's the level of expectation. But how big a moment was that?
I thought that was a bigger moment for the players rather than the fans. Maybe I'm living in my own silly little bubble, but I sense even before then, the fans could sort of see something happening. We'd had a couple of big wins at home before that, 6-0, and, Kyogo had scored a hat-trick. So they could see some seeds there. So I thought that the supporters were sort of getting on board. But I thought that game was really important for the players, winning away. As you know, winning away from home, you gain so much more belief, especially at Aberdeen, which is a tough place to go. Traditionally, the way we won, scoring late, that's when I felt the pendulum shifted for the players, because up until then I'd kind of been not protecting them, but saying, look, everything bad that's happening, don't worry, I'll take it. You know, just bide your time. It'll kick in. And I felt after that game that they felt, okay, this is the moment he's been talking about. And after that game, I sensed within the playing group that they started to see themselves and believe themselves. And okay, we can go on a bit of a run here.
Just before we get too far ahead of ourselves in the season, just I think Dermot Desmond did an interview a few months ago. Don't know if you saw it, but he was talking about the interview process when he spoke to you, that you were one of the guys that didn't ask for anything back, didn't ask for any guarantees. More than anything else, you wanted the job. You showed the self-belief to him that regardless, once you got the job, pieces would come together. I mean, was that a big consideration, the way you went into that interview?
I thought it was important because obviously, again, understanding the background of how they got to me and the fact that obviously the club had pursued Eddie Howe, who's a fantastic manager, and you know, when you go so far down the track with somebody and then it falls over, I think the last thing Dermot or anyone at the club probably wanted to hear was another manager saying, well, you know, I need this or I need that, you know. And I was quite comfortable saying, look, just hand me the reins and leave the rest to me. I was confident in myself.
Without a coaching staff around you, as well.
That is pretty remarkable. There's not many managers who do that, who walk in, you know. And is that because you have this belief which you've built up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just feel real comfortable. I mean, I literally walked in here by myself, and there's not just the players, there's all the staff, there's all, you know, the people who work with the club that I have to then convince about me more than anything else, because ultimately if they don't believe in me and what I say, and when I walk through these doors see some sort of hope there, then everything else I have, doesn't matter how much knowledge I have, doesn't work. But I don't know, I've loved that. I guess coming from Australia, I've been an outsider in football my whole career. You know, everything I've done in football has been as an outsider because of geography more than anything else, not because of, you know, the work I've done or the experience I've had. But well, he's an Australian, what does he know? And, you know, anyone who's come across an Australian, particularly sports, and we don't mind sort of people having our backs against the wall, you know, people putting us down. And to me, I saw it as a challenge. I said, look, that's not to say if I found people within here that I didn't think were up to it, I wasn't going to make a decision straight away. But at the same time, I thought, well, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people in this building who have had a lot of success. We went through a tough time last year. You learn a hell of a lot going through a tough time. Maybe they learned a lot last year and were looking for something new. And I was prepared to test that, because the reality is if I brought people in anyway, it wouldn't have made the job any easier. It wouldn't have fast-tracked anything. It would have made me feel comfortable, but I'm not interested in feeling comfortable. I was interested in being successful. So that was where I kind of pitched it towards. And I think, again, that gave the club comfort that I knew I was prepared to take on the enormity of the challenge.
At what point then did you say, right, I've got the job now, I'd like 12 new players? Or because the turnaround was huge. I think it was actually 12 in last summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 12 initially. Or 13 initially. Yeah. And you know, even though they didn't have success the year before, it was a good team. Mm-hmm. Like the players who left the club, I mean, you look at Odson went to a Premier League club. Christopher went to a Premier League club. El Yunusi went back to a Premier League club. Mm-hmm. Shane Duffy went back to a Premier League club. Ryan Christie went to Bournemouth, which is another Premier League club. So there was some real serious talent. Now, there are many reasons why they weren't successful, but it was a good side. It was a strong team.
Yeah.
So with all that leaving the building, and some of it still with me up until the sort of second, third round, I knew I had to not only bring in, you know, some players just for numbers' sake, but, you know, they had to hit the ground running. So
it also felt like, though, every decision was 100% yours. There was no transfer committee. They had belief in you. And I guess every signing that comes in and hits the ground running and works, the greater the belief is, keep backing them.
Yeah, well, that was the whole thing. When you come in by yourself, then I'm also going to take responsibility. Yeah. And they know that. So that included the transfer area. I said, look, you know, I have control of this area. Give it to me, and with support, obviously, of the scouting network and the people involved in the club. But again, I was prepared to back myself, and I said, look, I'll take responsibility if it doesn't work. And I think if you're prepared to take responsibility and people see that sort of intestinal fortitude you have to make a decision, then they'll back it. You know, if it doesn't work, then you take the flack for it.
The record's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, were any of the guys you brought in real punts, because some of them were, yeah, you know, very late on in the day. Yeah. And did you see it as a risk bringing the players over from Japan?
Kyogo was the least risk out of all of them. I was so confident about him. I'd watched him, you know, even though I didn't coach him, coaching against him. And my team, you know, even the year we won the championship, I remember, you know, talking to our players, and the defenders always say he's the one player they couldn't handle, you know. And it's a good, really good standard in Japan. So he was the least, and he was the first one I said, as soon as, like, even when I got the job, look, this is, I have to sign this guy. So he was kind of the least risk for me. The risky ones for me were guys like, you know, sort of Joe Hart and Cameron Carter-Vickers and Jota, because there was different sort of scenarios around all of them. How are they going to adapt? More to me was how they're going to adapt to life up here, playing for this football club. Because what I'd seen, the history of the club, was some very good players with good pedigree had come up here and struggled. Mm. So for me, that was going to be where the biggest risk lies. But again, you know, I had conversations with all of them. I really put big stock into just talking to people, and particularly footballers, just getting to understand where they're at motivation-wise. Ability, you kind of know, you watch them and you can see that the strengths and so forth, but what kind of people were there? And again, I go with my gut with that. And with all of them, I just felt, if you look at them, they all, a bit like me, I guess, came in with a point to prove. You know, whether that was Joe or Jota or Cameron Carter-Vickers or any of these guys, they came in not because of great form or it was everyone was after them. It was almost not last chance to learn, but it was like, here's an opportunity for you to go to a big club that maybe you didn't expect. And I think I like that. Yeah. You know, I like that they brought that to the table. So
you're looking for the personality in a player as well hugely, as their ability?
Hugely so. Hugely so.
What did you get
what's,
saved off
personality? Personality, probably the wrong word.
I mean, come on.
So, I mean, are they an equal measure, or would you put one ahead of the other?
No, I think they're an equal measure, because if I say to our scouts, I want a right winger, they'll show me 10 right wingers, and they're all good players. Mm. Like, they wouldn't be showing to me, because they're all playing at a decent level. Mm. So what's going to separate them? There might be some, you know, what's their individual strengths? Do they fit? Do I see them? Do I picture them in my team, the way we play? So if he's a right winger, we kind of know they've got to be quick or be able to beat people one-on-one. Do they have those, or are they more that like to get it to feet? So you look at the playing characteristics, but then beyond that, what's going to be the difference? And to me, it's, well, what's their character? What's their personality? What's their motivation for coming to this football club? Is there something beyond just the normal? And that's where I put equal stock in it, because if I get the right one, then with the ability, then they are successful. If I get the wrong one, not only does it affect that player, but it affects my dressing room as well.
Yeah. Is it fair to say on Joe Hart, I mean, really interesting. He's had a great, great career, but the previous season he'd been at Burnley and he'd gone to Spurs and wasn't playing. Was it because of the conversation you had with Joe, why you brought him up, or were you going to bring him regardless of?
No, it was a conversation, because, you know, there was a couple of goalkeepers. I felt we needed experience. There's no doubt, because with everyone who'd left the club, including Scott, you know, Brandy was such a massive influence, I felt, you know. And for the most part, I like working with younger players. It suits my system. So I thought the one area where I can work, get a more experienced player is a goalkeeper. So I was speaking to two or three experienced ones. And, it was a conversation I had with Jay. Not that he was, you know, jumping out of his skin. He just kind of said, listen, I've had a tough time. I've fallen out of love with the game. My next move, I've got to be really into the whole project. I've got to know that. And I just sensed in his voice, he needed a bit of love. He needed a bit of, you know, him being put in an environment where he can feel like himself again, because he's a big personality. He's very upbeat. He's very vocal. And I think he wanted that place. And everyone I spoke to about him was that his training was outstanding. He loved mentoring younger players. Now, in terms of his ability, especially he was 34. Yeah. I thought he still had everything I needed in a goalkeeper. And when you're playing for Celtic as a goalkeeper, what do you need? You need to be able to pull off the big save. You're not going to be in the action all the time. And you need to have presence. I thought that was really important. When I look at the great goalkeepers that the club's had in the past, presence is a big one, you know. So he ticked all those boxes. But when I had the conversation with him, I got off the phone and I thought, well, if he's bought into what I've just said, I think I've got a good one for the environment we're setting up.
BT Sport Pods. Were any of the transfers, I think one of your questions, were they a punt? I think you said, I don't know if you were going down the line of Cameron Carter-Vickers, who's been a revelation, by the way, but he came late in the window. And I think you and I had sat and watched him playing for Spurs in was it a Conference League qualifier in June or July? I can't remember. He had a bad day. Yeah. I think you were wondering, weren't you?
And not that anybody could be judged on, on one particular game.
That was a bad one.
And he wasn't great. And, you know, I think had many Celtic fans watched that game, there would have been reservations. But, of course, it's, you know, it's not about that. But watching him play that game, thinking, blimey.
But that's a funny thing, though, right? So you're absolutely right. Is if you just sent a scout to that game and say, well, no, don't touch him, right? And then we could have missed a fantastic footballer and a fantastic character for us if we had done that. But I'd done a fair bit of homework before that, and he was one definitely that we were chasing. But I wasn't sure we'd be able to get him for a number of reasons. It was definitely going to have to be a loan scenario, but I think. And to be honest, I think that game helped us because I think Tottenham were trying to get a few players off their books at that stage, and Cameron was one of the ones. But when I looked at him the previous 2-3 seasons, he played in good championship clubs, tough league, played over 40 games for teams in the sort of top half of the championship table. Very solid, very consistent. For me, that was perfect. Now, he's exceeded my expectations because I think he's an even better footballer than probably I thought I was getting. I thought I was getting somebody really strong, solid, steady, but I think he's gone beyond that. And he was driving to Tottenham's training ground at 9:45, like the deadline, and I'm on the phone to him and trying to convince him to come up here. That was the first conversation I'd had with him. And to be honest, again, that worked in our favour because I think he didn't have any other options and he thought, well, all right. I think it was more of a punt for him than us.
What was your contingency plan then? Carter Vickers arrived, and there's been such a big player. But you think about how good he has been in a Celtic jersey. You know, maybe it would have been different had, you know, Celtic may not have got over the line had it not been for him.
I've got no doubt it would have been different, Chris. So, yeah, and they're the things that always in football you kind of. So, I don't know, every great moment I've had in my career, there's always an element of luck in there. You know, I think back and if it's a big game, it's somebody's hit the post or we've missed an opportunity or they've missed an opportunity. But if it happens so often, I think some of it's by design, you know, and we were fortunate, but at the same time, we were still there prepared to do it, you know, and I think that's the key, that even at, you know, 1:45 deadline day, we were still in there pitching hard to get another player in. It was important for us. If it didn't work, you're right, it would have left a massive hole. Could we have been successful without it? I think it would have been difficult to do that. But, you know, I guess the credit lies in us being persevering in that moment.
You had to sell, I guess, the club to all these players. You got them in, they wanted to come. What about your family as well? I mean, how have they settled the first year? Yeah. Was there any selling point to them, the wife and two kids, to say it's Glasgow for us now? Any questions asked?
I kept my wife away from any sort of weather reports or forecasts.
That was why.
To be fair, she's not a fan of the cold, so I was trying to sell every other part of it. But it's funny because we kind of made a decision as a family probably, you know, 5-6 years ago after I'd left the national team Australia. We had two young boys and my wife's been super, you know, she just said, look, this is what you want to do. I said, look, I've done as much as I can on that side of the world. Let's just go. Let's see where it takes us. And because the boys were young as well, we thought, okay, let's just go for it. So we had 4 years in Japan, which was fantastic. Totally different existence, but, you know, fantastic for all of us as a family to sort of experience. And so the move to Glasgow, like, you know, being in Europe, I think it was an easy sell. And I think what happens is when you move away, and I think most footballers will tell you the same thing, or people involved in our game, is that when you move away from your sort of family home and the family network in terms of, you know, relatives or friends, you become really close as a family. So my boys, they're two brothers, they're really close, they're super close. And us as a family, we've become really close. So the transition here has been really easy, to be fair. It's been really smooth.
Yeah, and they must love it because everyone shouts your name going around the city now because you're winning.
Yeah,
And is the wife still checking the weather?
No, she doesn't even bother anymore. But, look, I mean, that and to be fair, that was a weird one for my boys because in Japan, even though obviously I was a manager there and with success, they're different culture and people don't approach you. They're very reserved, and even though they might recognise you, no one would dare to come up with it. Seriously, here, they'll get me in the most unusual of circumstances, and you know, people are very friendly, as we know. And my boys have had to get used to the fact that, you know, every time we go out, you know, Dad's going to get selfies or photos with people.
Has it got Scottish accents?
Yeah, it's starting to, which is annoying the hell out of me. Only because being in Japan, they were going to an international school, so all the teachers were American. So they had this American twang, which was annoying the crap out of me. And now they've got this Glaswegian twist to it. They don't sound like my kids at all, mate.
Yeah, mate.
There's some horror stories. And they're learning some things that my wife's not too comfortable with either, being in a Glasgow school. But
it's huge, though, isn't it? It's huge, that settling. I mean, you did it. You came with all the family as well. You uproot them all. You move. I know it was a time in your career you wanted a new start as well. Mm. And then point off the back of Chelsea.
Yeah,
everyone has to settle.
I think it's a big deal. And I think that certainly, with the Japanese boys coming in, everybody was looking at them closely, how they would fit in. And mold. I knew Nakamura, I played with Nakamura briefly, who was a sensational player for the club. He fitted in. He used to come in with his interpreter every day, which was pretty interesting.
But
I think everybody was certainly looking at that. But, you know, it's...
Yeah, and that was a concern for me as well, just to make sure that, you know, I kind of worded the club that it's not just about supporting them on the field. We've got to really support them off the field. So, you know, Kyogo came across with his sort of interpreter who was working for his agency. We've actually ended up employing him at the club because obviously the other Japanese boys, and, you know, he's been a real help off the field with the guys, just to help them settle in. Some, you know, Itaguchi and Dazen have got family. They've got young kids. Yareo and Kyogo are single. But again, just giving them some sort of certainty off the field as help, because it's a big part of it. I know it was a massive, and not just for Celtic, for this club, but for all clubs. You know, the year before, particularly with lockdown and bringing guys in from other countries and then being stuck in their houses, not being able to get out and about. You know, people don't understand how important it is that players, you know, off field are really settled for them to be able to play, you know, to the best of their ability.
You already, I think, brought up a really important game in last season, the win, Pittodrie, Jota's late winner, and that you sort of kick on after that. Just a few other games I wanted to mention as well, because I think December was huge. The late winner up in Dingwall, Tony Ralston, really late in the day, 97th minute, and then what just after that, Premier Sports Cup final, Kyogo's performance that day. And I think you actually said to me in the day as well, again, maybe relating it back to Martin O'Neill's time, but winning the first trophy to set the tone, to make sure everyone's completely on board. I mean, the fans as well, you said that was huge.
I thought it was big. You know, Martin O'Neill came up, treble first season. But that first trophy in terms of pressure off now, you know, people talk about the job that Steven Gerrard did at Rangers. He won one trophy, you know, out of nine, never won a cup. But in terms of getting that under your belt, how big was that for you? And more importantly, but for the confidence of the team?
Yeah, confidence of the team, absolutely. Because again, that was a tricky period for us. We weathered the early storm and then sort of got on a really good run, obviously in the league and obviously in the cup. But about that time, we were on fumes. We had a lot of players getting injured.
Yeah. You know, Kyogo was a question mark. He wasn't
fit. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. He hadn't trained for... He was just determined to play that day. But there was no chance. He was, you know, his hamstring. And we obviously, the consequence of that, it was he missed a lot of time after. But he was just determined to play. But again, my instinct was like yours, that if he wants to play, I'll play him, because this is an important game, beyond just keeping him fit. But we were on fumes at the time. I think we lost Dave Turnbull on the day as well with a significant one. And, you know, that whole December, we were just kind of, you know, getting through games, getting results. I knew January would be good because I'd already lined up sort of Leo and Dazen and obviously Itaguchi to come in and Matty O'Reilly. And, you know, we had a couple of others that I thought were confident I was getting in. So I thought if we can get to December, winning the cup was massive, and also in touch in the league, like that game at Dingwall was a massive one for us.
I think if he'd drawn, you'd have been 6 points behind.
And very hard to bridge that gap, particularly when you know you've got to play Rangers for another three times. So any negative result in those games, and they're out of. So all those kind of things. But again, credit to the players. We didn't make excuses. They found ways to win games, and those kind of things really build belief. So that when we got back after the break, and like I said, we had four new players. Mm. You know, the energy was there. We'd won a trophy. We were going with a wet sail. You know, the players felt really good about what was coming up.
How dangerous then was the Rangers win for the players and yourself? Because that was the night when, you know, been there as a, you know, as a Celtic mm. player, beat Rangers 6-2 mm. first season, mm. and the belief just goes mm. up.
You're talking the 3-0 game.
I'm talking about the three. Yeah,
the three stars.
However good it was, it was an incredible night. Yeah. But then from that moment, yeah. in many respects, the pressure's really on, because the belief then from the Celtic fans is we are going to win the league. Yeah.
Well, that was the night I believed. Not that I never believed, but that was the night I thought, well, I knew that was a critical night. If they had won that game and got sort of four points ahead of us, I think, I thought that's a bridge too far. There's no way they're going to drop any more games against anyone else. And us winning home and away against them is going to be a tough ask. We had to be literally perfect. So that was a big night for us. But what did it for me was not that we won, it was the way we played. Because like you said, this is on the back of, and you know what it's like, when a record builds against you, we hadn't beaten them for quite a while. All these kind of things, the longer those things go on, the harder they are to break. So the fact that we could break that cycle of us not getting results and winning against them, but the manner in which we played. So we had, you know, Hatate, Matty O'Reilly, first derby game.
And they were
huge. Days Maeda had literally got off a plane from Japan and came on at the end there. Jakimakis's first real impact in a big game. He got fit. So there was all these things that came out of that night that, you're right, the expectations for supporters went through the roof. But within here, and certainly within me, I thought, okay, now we're a chance. I felt, okay, we're a chance to actually be able to win it.
What was the dressing room like after the game? Because the, you know, it's a great win, but it's just...
Yeah.
A win, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you remember, Cal was really good. You know, even when they were walking around, he was kind of speaking to the boys and saying, enjoy it, but job not done yet. And there was this real sense of no real massive celebrations, just, I think, a real confidence and belief. You know, when you walk back in the dressing room, you think you've done something significant. It's not the ultimate, but it's significant. You feel like, okay, I'm ready for this now. Let's go. Let's move on.
Calum's been a good captain, hasn't he? Given what he had to take over from.
Outstanding.
And he leads in a different way, but maybe you can shed some light on what he's like.
That was one of the key things for me. Was I kind of knew that, again, with Brownie leaving, the influence he had, and you're going, okay, well, it's all right for me to come in and have all these ideas, but I'm going to need some real on-field strong leadership. Joe Hart was kind of part of that sort of process, but... Everyone before I came here was saying, look, Callum's the heir apparent. You know, I was like, okay, that's great to hear, but it's like anything else. Unless you get that responsibility, how's he going to be?
Yeah.
I didn't announce him straight away. I kind of took the first week or so to just assess things and just having discussions with him. He is a different type, but I saw inside of him there was a kind of glint in his eye that he wanted this. You know, he wasn't going to let me give it to anyone else. He wanted this responsibility. He'd done his time. He'd worked under fantastic leader. He'd had success at the club. You know, he wanted this to be his club. He wasn't going to move on. He wasn't going to go to the Premier League or whatever. I think he'd made a decision in his mind that this was his club. So now he wanted to take this club to the next level. And he's been outstanding.
Yeah.
Because you've got to perform on the field, and he has to, because he's not a screamer and a shouter or you know, one that's going to get stuck in. He's got to play his football. But within his personality, he's led his own way that, you know, there's been a real strength that I think the players, you know, this group of players has really sort of bonded with, and he's been outstanding.
You mentioned Jakimakis as well. It took a bit of time for him to get fit. I think you just said his fitness. Like at one point he ran behind the goal, didn't he? But did he do his calf or pull his hamstring?
Yeah, I was in a warm-up.
Just felt like at that point it wasn't going to happen for him at that time, but became such a key player too.
Yeah, and again, that's football sometimes, that there's no perfect script. And he had we got him in late, he missed pre-season, then he got COVID as soon as he got here. So then he had another sort of 2 weeks, 10 days where he could do nothing. And then we sort of got him half fit, but he wasn't, and we threw him out there, misses a penalty in the last minute against
Libby.
Yeah, against Livingston here, and everything was working against him. But my information to these guys is, mate, this is just testing you. Just stay strong, get yourself fit. The time will come. And again, he was one of the key ones in the back half of the year because obviously Kyogo was out and we didn't have really another sort of striker in there we could rely on. And he's different, but... And like I said, he didn't score that night against Rangers, but if you remember, he really caused him some problems. I mean, McGregor made a couple of unbelievable saves off him, but his physical presence made a difference for us. And I think he got confidence out of that as well.
And in terms of going forward, it's interesting because you've got Furashi, you've got Giakoumakis. I mean, is you play the way you play. You know, is there a possibility of you playing them up front together?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think that those kind of things always go through my head. When I put a squad together, even though I have a real clear picture about how we want to play, I really like there being some fluidity and uncertainty in it. So, you know, with the way we play, there's a lot of movements that happen in there that are unusual and people kind of look at and go, Jesus, they're just free-flowing. They're not. They're really structured. But, you know, when I look at Jacko and Kyogo before he came, you know, in Japan, did play as one of the two. You know, he was almost like off a big striker. That was his niche in Japan. You know, he didn't really play as nine. So there is a possibility. That would mean some difference in other positions, but it's not something I'd rule out. But I also think that, you know, there are just some games where each of their qualities can help us enormously in different ways, you know, and... With the club, I knowing the club was going to play 60 games every year, having two strikers who I know have the quality to make an impact in their own way is great.
I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think that Kyogo was missing for a large part of the season. And just on the victory at Ibrox, was that a bigger... I mean, I don't know whether you can sort of measure the games... But was that a bigger win than the 3-0?
I think in terms of the win in the league, yeah. I thought after that they're not going to catch us.
You knew?
Yeah, I just had a feeling that we're not going to lose between now and the end of the year. You know, the only game that you kind of... Not that you're dismissive, because all the games were challenging, but winning at Ibrox and the belief that gives you, I looked at the players and by that stage... They were driving it more than I was, you know. I could sense in them that, right, what's the next game? Let's go for it, you know.
You went behind early as well.
That's what I mean. So those, you don't do that by design, but the fact that you can come from behind in a place like, you know, Ibrox, where you've only got 700 supporting you, and so there's so many positives that I didn't think, you know, for us, I didn't feel we could be caught after that, because I also knew that, you know, we had Kyogo coming back, Turnbull was coming back, Jota was coming back, all these guys who were kind of really influential the front half of the year. So we had a lot of ammunition going into that sort of final stretch. So
nobody knows when the injured players are coming back these days. So you're doing something right here. Training ground, everybody used to know, and everybody
I mean, there's got to be a little bit of ducks and drakes going on. I mean, it's a kind of weekly thing where people sort of test, but you got to keep a little bit of sort of mystery around things. And you know, from my perspective, there's no secret, I like to keep people on edge internally and externally. I think you're at your best that way. I think if you're not comfortable, especially in elite sport, that's when you're at your best. So I purposely, even people within the club, I always keep them on edge. They don't really know what I'm thinking or what I'm going to do next. And I kind of like to do that externally as well.
BT Sport Pods. And I'm sure players, you know, we talk about coming in, making an impact as well. Players leaving too, because you just mentioned the game at Ibrox, the victory. Carter Vickers got the winner that day, but the other player that scored is Rogic. Yeah. He's been such a big part of this club for so long as well. And it looked like he was doing a fantastic job for you. I think maybe it was a bit of surprise out there when the news broke that he was leaving.
Yeah, I'm sure there was, because he was. I thought he was outstanding for us this year. Yeah. And obviously I've known Tom for a long time. And historically, he'd never really put a really strong, consistent season. Yeah. He, His highlights reel is unbelievable.
The goals are incredible. Just big moments as well.
Oh, yeah. Massive. I mean, if nothing else, like he's got the best highlights reel of just about any Celtic player, because he scored it against Rangers. He scored in cup games. It's just massive. But, you know, I guess he'd had some injury problems and he never really, but I thought this year was really strong for us all the way through. But again, knowing Tommy well, for him to do that, he's got to be in a certain mindset. And we were talking all the way during the year, and I knew he'd kind of made up his mind that, you know, he wanted it to end it, but he wanted to end it in the right way, but he felt it was a time for the next step. So it probably came more of a shock to people outside than me, because I'd been talking to him for a while. And, you know, my thing for him was, you know what, Tommy, make sure your legacy is intact. If you can sign off as a champion, I said, mate, your time at Celtic will never be forgotten. You know, you don't want to leave on the back end of last year with a disappointment. Yeah. So he was good at that, and could he have played on? Absolutely. But
The other thing you remember about the game at Ibrox as well is who Ange met pre-match.
You brought that up a bit too many times. You had a big hug with Ali McCoy. The last Celtic manager to get that close was Neil Lennon. And, you know what happened there?
That didn't end well, did it?
I know.
The one I'm still waiting for is Big Al in Brazil, because he's dodged me the whole time. Ali at least has come up and said hello.
I think he'll be dodging you for a while.
Ali regrets that now, because look what happened.
but just on the Al in Brazil, ridiculous from him. But have you proved a point? Do you look at it like that?
Why would I prove a point? Try and prove a point to somebody I don't know, and not I'm talking about Alan here, but just in general, you know. Yeah. I think, like you said, we go along, especially in the current sort of state of affairs, we just judge people too quickly and too easily, and I've never let that bother me. You know, there are people I respect who. And obviously the people closest to me who I love, and my friends and my family, who, you know, if they say something about me or I've done something wrong, then, you know, that affects me. But what other people think of me who don't even know me? I think I don't go about trying to prove people wrong. For me, what I do is, you know, I love what I do. I'm passionate. I just want to create something special and be part of something special. That's what
you want. You want to have over anyway, by the way.
Is there never a moment,
big step?
Is there never a moment where you think, oh, I'm glad I get that right up them?
No. It doesn't motivate me, mate. It doesn't. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, to be fair to Alan Brazil, he hasn't heard of me, even though I played against him, right? I did. He came to Australia and actually tonked us 4-0. He came out to Australia. I was playing for South Melbourne. I actually played against him. And, he won't remember that. But I'm thinking he doesn't know who I am. And, you know, half of his job is to entertain and get people talking. And do I think it's disrespectful? Yes, I do, because I think there's an element of it that you think, well, hold on a sec. I wouldn't be getting a position like this unless there's something there in my background. It wouldn't be too hard to dig and find out exactly who I am. So is it disrespectful? Yes, it is. But it doesn't bother me, mate.
The Champions League ahead, what a massive challenge. Yeah, I'm sure, obviously trying to get the squad stronger as well, but immediately you've got your sort of training staff, you're making, you know, not improvements, but you're bringing people in. Yeah. Harry Kewell's coming in.
They're
trying to do that with the playing squad, and then Champions League football, and you're straight in on the horizon.
Did I read, I might have this wrong, did you not release Harry Kewell, one of your clubs, when you
wasn't released, but he was at a club I took over, and, you know, he could have stayed on for another year, and we had a discussion and a kind of mutual agreement. It's happened so many times.
Must have ended well if he's back in.
Well, I keep saying to players, irrespective, I said, don't burn any bridges. The football world is very, very small. So you never know who you're going to come across. But, yeah, no, look, you know, for me, again, that was a big motivator last year. Yeah. As much as winning the league, knowing that there was direct qualification in the Champions League, I just thought, what an opportunity. Why? You know, that was a big driver for me internally to say, well, no, let's try and win it this year. Don't worry about, you know, trying to just build. So, because being in the group stages, it means our pre-season is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, our recruiting is totally different. Mm. The way we plan is totally different.
The money is totally different.
Correct. Yeah. So all those kind of opportunities that are given to you, I thought it's such a great reward for winning it last year. So. And there's the opportunity. And the key then is, okay, there's an opportunity to play Champions League. What does that mean? Well, what that means is that if you're going to make the most of it, rather than just say, well, we're in it and participate in it, is to to gain something from it. How do you gain something? Well, you make an impact one way or another, so that what we want to become is a regular Champions League football club. It's not beyond the realms of this football club. There are plenty of clubs who are our size who are regulars in Champions League football, group stage football. And I think you only get there by, every time you're in it, making an impact one way or another. Now, the reality is we're going to meet some unbelievably strong sides. But, you know, even a win or even a performance, as is in the history of this football club, can make a difference to the way the football club's perceived, how we perceive ourselves, so that when you're in it the next time, you go, okay, well, you know, we start to feel like we belong rather than just, okay, we're pot four, we're put in, and that's it. We play six games and then we're out again, you know.
And I've seen you talk about, I think last season, a quote about you don't have a bus or something, something like that. Yeah. You have this style of football. Yeah. It's great on the eye, but will there be little tweaks?
Champions League tweaks? I mean,
you know, Brendan did a great job up there, but I mean, you know, Champions League, he was on the end of some hidings against some great teams.
And that's something you mentioned.
And, talked about his philosophy and we're going to play this certain way. I mean, how are you going to...
So, I think we got a little bit of a taste of it in the Europa League last year. So, I mean, you look at Leverkusen and Betis, they're Champions League group stage. Yeah. Participants this year. So we had a tough group.
Yeah.
And we didn't change our approach and we got tonked. You know, we got a right, particularly with Leverkusen here at home.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone saw us change our approach. What I think, from my perspective, what it is we don't want to change our approach. The nature of the opposition changes that anyway to a certain extent. But I believe that the way we play our football will give us the best chance for an impact. Why? Because ultimately when you play these top sides, what you try and make them do is feel a little bit uncomfortable, right? So if you go out there and you, say, give them territory, give them possession, straight away they're comfortable. That's what they get on a weekly basis. I think if you can be a bit of a disruptor without sort of, you know, totally exposing yourself, I think you're more likely to make an impact, but there is a flip side to that. You are vulnerable, absolutely. But the alternative, like I said, is to be comfortable, allow the opposition to be comfortable, and then you pretty much know what the outcome's going to be. It may not be a 4-0, but it'll be a 2-0. You'll still lose. Mm-hmm. It's just a manner in which you do that. And like I said, for me, that would be a missed opportunity. So what I say by that is, yes, we're not going to change our approach. The level of the opposition means we're going to be restricted in how much we have the ball, how many opportunities we're going to create but we're still going to try and be the football team we want to be.
What about the domestic challenge as well? Do you expect a real big challenge from Rangers this season, like the old wounded animal, if you like, to come back at you? And also, as part of that, did you take even more satisfaction winning the league when you saw what Rangers did in the Europa League in the end?
I was under no... They were a good side. Yeah. I knew that... I mean, for me, there was two challenges when I took on the job this year. One was the challenge of this football club to get it up and running. But you always assess your competition. And when I looked at Rangers at the end of last year, I thought, mate, they've gone through undefeated. They're a good side. They've been together for 3-4 years. They're maturing, all sort of peaking at the right time. They're really strong physical team. And if you look at this year in the league, what did they lose? 3 games? 2 against us.
Yeah.
You know? So they almost had another perfect season. So I was under no illusions. They're a good side. Yeah. And they're going to be a tough opponent again next year. I think Hearts will improve. I think the likes of Hibs and Aberdeen, I don't think, will be as disappointing as they were this year.
Yeah.
So there are challenges domestically. And it's still got to be the main driver to be champion again. To me, every year you start out, you want to be domestic champions. Everything else that comes after that is kind of, not a bonus, but is the add-on.
Well, that would get you right back into the Champions League again, as you probably know.
And that's what you need to do. And that's what we need to do. We need to be there on a regular basis. So, again, like I said, and there won't be, there may be, I don't think anyone underestimated us last year, but I think there was a little bit of unknown about us, even the way we played. And that won't be the case this year. So, and hence the reason, you know, I've sort of bought Harry Kewell in and changed things a little bit, and we need to bring in some new players, not many, because we need to evolve.
Yeah.
You know, wherever we finished last year has to be our starting point. It can't be that we want to finish there again. So we need to stay ahead of the pack. You know?
Just going off piste a little bit.
It's not like
you've forged a really good career for yourself. Is there anybody you've modelled your coaching on, or any role models?
Not specific, but you kind of go through your consciousness of as a player and the people you've come across and think who's made impact, and there's stuff that comes back into my head where, you know, there's certain football clubs I used to watch all the time, you know, so the Liverpool side of the 70s and 80s, which used to play really, you know, big possession, sort of high possession kind of football. And then, you know, you even before that, you know, the Dutch and playing with wingers. And then I was coached by Ferenc Puskas for 3 years, mm-hmm. right? To be fair, he wasn't a great tactician or technical coach, but he just loved attacking football. And the team I played for, he loved playing with wingers. And then back then, it's sort of, we're talking about the 80s, 4-4-2 was, everyone was playing 4-4-2. Mm-hmm. No one played with wingers. And he just said, no, we're going to play with wingers. And this was in Australia, obviously. And I just thought he was going against every convention possible. But how enjoyable it was for me as a player to play that way and B, having a point of difference, what an impact you can make if you're not doing what everyone else does. So those, and then since then, I've kind of always been attracted to either managers or football teams or other sports where I see people doing things a little bit differently, you know, going against the grain in some respect, not just for the sake of it, just to be radical, but also have an impact on it, you know. And then you see when Pep first came through with Barcelona, and, you know, I loved possession football before then, you see what he did and you go, oh, wow. And then I tried to replicate that in Australia. My thing was, going back to the earlier point, was, well, you can't do that with Australian players. Mm-hmm. And that got to be in my bonnet. Yeah, I'll show you I can. You know, that they're the kind of things that I think have had influences in me, and that's why, whatever I do, I try and just be that little bit different, a little bit against the grain, a little bit, you know, away from what the convention normally says.
I know you've spoken about your dad's influence.
Yeah, massive.
And I'm sure your dad would have enjoyed watching yourself.
Yeah, massive. I mean, it's one of those things in life, Chris. Yeah, you kind of, I wish he was here, mate. You know, it's. And you know that he would be watching, but we used to get up in the middle of the night to watch clubs like Celtic. You know, so for me, thinking, oh, I would have loved to just pictured him on the couch, just, you know, in the middle of the night in Australia and putting that on and seeing his son, you know, managing one of the biggest football clubs in the world. So, yeah, it's massive. He's with me all the time, mate. And, you know, I've got friends who've, I don't know, it's this, I guess in all walks of life, but particularly I think my generation, the father-son relationship is a unique one because he never told me he loved me. He never gave me a multitude of hugs and all that kind of thing. And I keep talking on about that because I'm the total opposite with my kids. I'm bloody too soft with them. But when they're gone from your life, you realise just what a massive influence they are. And he was absolutely the most powerful influence, not just from football, just from the values. Not that he sat me down and said to me, son, this is how you're going to be. I saw him work his backside off, mate, for his family. There's something to be said for that, just working hard, you know, for your family and being a decent person.
Yeah.
I say that to the players all the time, you know, you can have money, you can have all the fame, nothing wrong with being just a good person, mate.
I say that to him all the time. I do feel. And actually, on that note, just before we finish, who is your favourite pundit?
Mate, I'll tell you what.
Do you even watch the pre-match? Do you watch the build-up?
No, I do. But you know what? It's one of those, because, like, even, you know, with Chris and all these guys, like, for me, coming from the other side of the world, these are guys you're watching. You're going, oh, they're unbelievable players. And part of you says, you know what, I wouldn't mind meeting him. But then part of me thinks, no, maybe I shouldn't. You know?
Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent stuff, Ange. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it, mate. Thanks, guys. Excellent. Thanks, thank you, mate. BT Sport Pods.